Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. I'm John Montgomery, and it's the first week of a term. And boy, let's just say, and we apologize, Mike and I are a bit, we did do a podcast right before the end, but we're kind of a bit out of practice. How's it going, my friend? Fresh back from holiday.
Yeah, I'm not out of practice. I'm just jet lagged.
Okay, I'm out of practice. But yes, it's our new term ep, one of four of the year. I think at least one of my favorite eps to do. I don't know about you, Mike, but I really enjoy going through the courses this term because we spent so much time getting them in line. It's nice to be able to finally talk about them, isn't it?
Yeah, everyone's sort of like, why don't you leak? Well, we don't do it like that. But when it's time to talk about it, we're really happy to talk about it. And as you say, like it's a lot of effort getting this stuff together, but also it's great when there's a good response when we publish the course list because, it's great
we do
to see
it for our members, frankly.
Yeah.
And actually, really quick mention before we even get to going to our new courses, just a quick wrap-up thing that actually has a tremendous impact on future courses is the end of term survey. And we sent out a survey at the end of last week because so many of our courses were done on time. In fact, all of our courses, we got the term survey out. So those of you who are a member of our last term, please take the time to take that survey. It's really valuable feedback. And it certainly leads to what we're talking about in this podcast, which is all of our new courses that we have on offer this term. So where should we start, my friend?
Well, I think we should start at the beginning. I don't think we should. We should start in the A's.
Alpha. We'll do it by alpha. That'll make sure that we actually, because I always get confused by the end of the podcast. Not confused is the right word, but I always get a little worried at the end of the podcast that we actually haven't covered everything. But so, let's go ahead and start with After Effects 224. I'm really happy to have this term. I'm happy whenever we have a cool MoGraph course. But especially happy with this one with Tom Green, who's actually taken part in some previous offerings in courses we have at FX PhD. But this time he's devoting a full course to kind of effectively breaking down a spot that he had done in the past for a car dealer, but frankly, in this case, rebuilding it for you guys who are taking the course. And he's using a wide variety of techniques from things like trap code, dealing with bringing in 3D models and relighting them, dealing with logos, whether you want to use the built-in 3D functionality within After Effects or maybe do something on your own, which I would personally recommend that, but I'm going to be watching what Tom has to say about that. I think it's going to be a really, really cool course, and it took a lot of the things that people have reacted to well in the past, and it's basically a project-based course, dealing with kind of tried-and-true workflow techniques on the job, and that's where Tom is really focusing on this term. And another cool thing, and something that bears mentioning, is some changes that we've made to help actually deal with, make sure that we get all our classes delivered on time, is that Tom has been actually working on this for the past several months. So he already has several of the classes, a great number of the classes actually already recorded and in the can. But not quite enough that you guys don't have an opportunity to actually provide some feedback at the start of the term as to what you'd like to see later in the term, make sure he's on the right track. So again, just one of the changes that we've made in the back at FXPHD that happens to impact this course in specific, because I've been almost working with Tom on this since we launched the April term, I think, Mike.
Yeah. Hey, something I wanted to point out, and I always forget to do this, so I'm going to do it up front, because I always think, I'll do that at the end, and I always forget. When you're looking at the courses in the course page, obviously you go to the FX PhD website, and under our courses, obviously the standard courses on the left, the vault courses on the right, as there always are. A couple of terms ago, I'm going to say like three terms ago, we made sure that you could also play just the video of the relevant new courses. So you'll just, I guess, sort of point it out that either from the button on the top right or under Get Full Details, you'll see the Watch an Overview of the Course come up in the right-hand corner. So if you're interested in like sussing out the courses, you can, of course, watch the whole O-Week video, which we're really happy for you to share with other people. But you can just click on individual courses and watch the intros to those. And it's really important that you'd be able to do that, obviously, from our point of view. So Some of the older ones in the vault don't have that, but most of them do now. We've enough time's gone by that that's all happened. And so, it's just a good way of sort of being able to work out what you want. And as always, you can sample the first two classes from any courses until you decide on what courses you want, and then you can lock in, as we've always had.
Yeah, definitely. And as well as, in case it's not painfully obvious as well, just filtering the courses with those buttons at the top, the FX tags. I should just actually call those what they are. Instead of trying to be clever sometimes, you can get too clever, I should just call those filter for filtering the various courses to make it clear. But, you can check out certain areas of interest to you, whether it's 3D compositing MoGraph or just simply picking the new courses by clicking on the new button. And that's actually what I'm using now to keep track of the courses that we're talking about in this.
Me too. Hey, there are 12 new courses on offer. These are the ones we obviously talk about now, but they are intermingled with a bunch of courses that are so popular we've brought them back with the professor in the forums as they were when they were originally done. That's all the ones on the standard courses. And they come out weekly. And then, of course, on the right-hand side, as I mentioned earlier, the Vault courses, these are the ones that are kind of, as I think you call them, John, our greatest hits. And you get all 10 classes as soon as you hit download. So if you wanted, for example, to do an introduction to Arnold, there's a 101 course in the Vault, so you could click on that. Or if you were kind of a bit more familiar with Arnold and you wanted to do the 201 course, that's the real-world lighting and rendering with Arnold, you could take that this term. So let's say I thought, well, I want to do the Arnold course and I've kind of got a hangle on it, but it was a little while ago. You might want to pick one of those Vault courses. You can watch all of those, skim through them and get yourself up to speed, and then start the 201 course, which is on the left, which is a standard course, but it was done once before. So that's why it's not got a new tag beside it. And, that's going to have the professor coming and answering questions in the forums and doing stuff just like, say, our Audio 206 Creating Killer Audio with MoGraph, which is a new course on offer this term by our own Ryan. And John, we know Ryan's very clever with audio. It's a real asset to have him on the team for that reason.
Yeah, we do actually ping him a lot of a few questions, and Ryan in
like
his
yesterday.
Dual, like yes, as in yesterday. Yes, well said. And if you've noticed, the O-Week video audio quality is also mixes much better, too, since Ryan's been taking over that. But
basically, we're all better since Ryan joined.
Yes.
We love
Ryan. But actually, we talked about this last week, but I know many of you are new, but this is one of the courses I think we might have leaked, I think. Or no, we didn't, actually. We didn't leak this course.
I'm sorry.
It's been so long since I did the O-Week videos. But basically,
what is this so long thing? It's like 3 weeks. Come on.
Well, since it kind of runs together. So we got this actually suggestion from one of our members on Twitter. Just actually tweeted at FXPHD, which, by the way, if you want to keep track on what's going at FXPHD, that's a great Twitter source to follow. It's very low noise, really basically covering when things go wrong or really important information. You're not going to get clogged with some auto-generated tweet every hour by us. That's not the idea behind that. But anyway, someone suggested that on Twitter. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Actually contacted him via direct message. And said, hey, I think we've got a guy who can teach that. Hooked him up with Ryan, and actually member provided assistance with us in kind of sussing out what we're going to cover as part of this course. And of course, Ryan had some really good ideas on his own. So this members project is actually the Broforce project that you saw as part of the O-Week video, or the single clip that you can view, as Mike mentioned earlier. And then on top of that, he's going to go through a second project as well that has little less sound, in fact, no sound existing already, and that's the Moot Brand Identity sound design clip that Tim Clapham did as one of his courses in the past. Sorry, I was explaining to Mike beforehand. I am caffeinated up to the extreme today.
Now, we should come clean. In fact, we watched the Germany-Brazil game. John, big Germany fan. Might have hit the... No, I'm just kidding. So that's true. The interesting thing about this course is it's using Adobe Audition as its primary app, but there'll be some third-party plugins and stuff. And actually, those third-party plugins and some of those extra things that Ryan pulls in are really, really good. One of the things I like about our courses here at PhD is that we are not like linked to one equipment manufacturer or whatever, so you get an honest appraisal of when software's good, and also an honest appraisal of when you should use something else because there's a better way of doing it. It's not like we're showing stuff on behalf of Adobe and therefore would just stick to Adobe's tools or something like that. And Ryan has in the past done, you know, a bunch of stuff in completely different programs. So he really speaks from experience when he says, okay, well, this is a good way to go here with this particular thing. And actually, I'm actually thinking of doing this course, I have to confess, because as I've said many times in the past, audio is like a black art to me. I just don't think I've got very good ears. And I just, time and time again, I'm aware that if you have so-so quality video, but great audio, you can survive, but you can have the crispest, greatest looking video in the world. But if you have bad audio, people just tune out.
That's like I made the comment.
Have no audio.
I think I made that comment in the Owick video. It's like without audio, you really don't get the most out of your graphics design or anything. So it's a critical part of that process. And again, to Mike's point, the great thing about this is it's also going to be something, you know, using Audition, because I think of the accessibility of it to so many people who have that now as part. I think a lot of people have the full Monty, the full package of the Creative Cloud. But again, this is going to be very much as well about just, you know, conceptual and creative aspects of creating sound. So probably, you know, much less button pushing and more about the project, which is, again, one of the things that we like about the courses at FX PhD.
Now, I used that example a moment ago about Arnold, which probably should have used this next course as my example, which is the digital matte painting techniques, because it's a better example. As John outlined two terms ago, we set down the path of doing a proper matte painting techniques curriculum, which involved multiple courses over multiple terms. And so here we are at the third of those, which is new this term. But just so that you can, join in and not feel excluded, we have the sort of 201, which was the initial one, the 202, which was obviously the second part last term, and which is repeated, both of those, and now the 203, which is the latest part of the matte painting techniques. Okay, now I'm punch drunk. But one of the criticisms we had early on, John, was that it was just stuff in Photoshop, right? Where this course has now evolved past that.
Yeah, and frankly, that was intentional at this point.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah. I mean, it's fair enough. I mean, it's a fair enough critique, and it's kind of funny because after the first one, I was like, well, it's all Photoshop. And like, well, that's what you ask for when you want digital matte painting. But I think that's partly on us for maybe not doing a better job communicating, frankly, about it. But yes, this is, again, taking the concepts that were dealt with in the first two courses, a lot of Photoshop, taking a scene and turning it summer or winter or something like that. Your core skills are painting. And then this final section is actually going to kind of build upon that and show the basics of turning into a full 3D matte painting. In fact, Ludo is going to bring in a guest lecturer to actually help him with that, because at DNEG, I mean, that's what he does. He does digital matte paintings, which is in effect ending up providing elements to compositors to do the rest of the work. So through the series of three courses, you're actually going to be able to see the true digital matte painting workflow that you would expect, and the skills that you would need to, you know, work at a facility doing feature film level work. That's not to say that if you're working at a smaller facility doing commercials, that this course isn't for you, because I think we talked about this before, maybe in the first course, Mike, that I would have killed for a course like this when I was working on Flame, because again, it's those basic artistic skills that you need to create a believable matte painting. And our hope, and we consider this our leak, but our hope now is to actually take this to the next level and build upon this and do some really complex full 3D composites with effects and everything, taking the groundwork that was laid in these courses and taking it to the next level. So again, hopefully you'll see that, you know, we're really trying to build a strong curriculum on this with the building blocks and building from there to, a really polished finished product.
It's funny. It's been one of the most difficult mountains to climb, the matte painting. We tried several matte painting courses early on that seemed to be really interesting to a lot of people, but they were, I guess if I was to criticize them, and I'm criticizing myself because I was organizing them, they erred a bit on the concept art side of things. And matte painting is one of those things that everybody says, well, you should just do a matte painting course. And it's like, well, yeah, but getting the right mix on that is actually proven more complex than it would sound.
Or trying to squeeze too much in a single course, which we also tried. We tried with Ludo, and it was too much, frankly, to do in one course.
So yeah, so this we're kind of proud that we've got to this position now. But you know, just to back up your earlier point, John, it was because of this dialogue with you guys, like you guys talking to us about it, that we sort of understood the mix and the sentiments that you guys had, and then tried to adjust it accordingly so as to meet, you know, your expectations. And so there's probably no other sort of example in the current term stronger that the terms of us reacting to your feedback over many terms than this sort of series of courses, the curriculum that's going on. Another thing that we often do is we often have a tie-in between PhD and FX Guide. Now, the reason for that is that one of the huge advantages of the way the company is set up, the vast technical compound and complex that is the FX institution, is that we get to hang out with a lot of people doing really serious, hardcore work. So, for example, we've mentioned this before, we go to facilities and we see what you know stuff they're actually doing. And even if we can't necessarily at the time write about it, it just feeds into what courses we want to do, and we know what tools people are using, what recruiters are asking for, that kind of stuff. But one of the other things that happens is occasionally we do something like an FX Guide TV app on something, and just both John and I kind of look at each other and sort of go, God, it would be so good to get like a course on that kind of stuff. And I think FX Guide TV episode 190 was exactly that, John.
Yeah, it was. We had the opportunity to go sit down with one of our, actually, my goodness, long-time friends, Sam Edwards, professional friends we've known for years, and cover his work that he did doing visual effects for that new Cosmos television series that just premiered this year.
Called Cosmos.
What's the Space-Time Odyssey?
Odyssey,
sorry, mm-hmm. Yes. And Sam composited well over 250 shots on that. And what's interesting about it is he worked production site. In other words, working in the production offices doing work as opposed to an external facility, which actually really worked out well for them for the type of work that he did. Mm. He does. You know, he goes through, gets the shots done, can get feedback immediately and right away from the producers and other people who are working on the show. I mean, basically, I think we said it was about a sixth of the shots on the show is what
yeah, it was something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, a fascinating thing. So we had this FX Guide TV up, and you can check it out. It's number 190. And we got a lot of call and feedback from both Flame News as well as the Flame Logic Facebook page. That's a kind of a closed group for Flame artists. Actually, wanting Sam to do more training videos, and Sam talked to Sam about it and said, yeah, sign me up. So we signed
well,
him
also,
up
as soon you as also we been doing the sorry to interrupt you, but no, you've also been doing the user group, the Flame user group in LA and stuff. So you've been staying very close to that community.
Yeah. So we had our first LA Flame user group last month, and actually had well over 100 people turn out, which I thought was pretty good for a first time user group event in LA. Got a lot of feedback from them, too, that they were looking. Actually, I leaked the course there at that a couple weeks ago as well. But so we're really happy to have Sam come in to teach. He does a really nice job with his introductory video, kind of talking about his philosophy of what he wants to teach. But it's really, you know, kind of a compositing basics. He's going to do some classes on green screen, how to really get the most out of green screen, good quality edges and things like that, and then kind of work through in detail some of the shots he did on Cosmos in a far greater detail than what he did on the FX Guide TV up, kind of showing you how he works, his tricks of the trade, things like that. And I think both Mike and I have had the opportunity to kind of hang out and do what we call flame jam sessions almost, where you hang out with people and kind of show tips and tricks. And I think this is going to be something like that. I mean, he's been on Flame for, it's almost since Flame came out.
And
the very early days starting in New York. What's that?
I laughed before about those jam sessions because the one thing that this won't be like is the intimidation of sitting in one of these jam sessions where we'd have like a group of like 12 of us sitting around, all flame experts, and someone would be showing something. And you know how you kind of pause briefly to explain something, but so you got your pen in your hand and then you go to press a button. And if you're not talking to someone, you just bang, 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 bang. But if you're explaining something, you kind of pause momentarily to articulate something that is important. And everyone in the room would go, no, the button's on the right. It's there. And you'd be like, yeah, no, I know that. I just, yeah, okay, right, fine, whatever. Press the button. It was like,
yes.
It was just like having 10 people hovering over you. It'd be like writing a novel and having people say, don't use that adjective next. use that verb.
It is quite intimidating.
Quite an intimidating session, but that's what I remember from the jam sessions. But you're right. That's my personal phobia coming through.
He's also really interested in getting feedback too from you guys who are taking the course as well, and would like to see in a couple of later courses. And I think he's not only a flame artist; he's actually well versed in Nuke. Was doing Nuke gig more recently when we started talking about this. So I think he brings that perspective as well. And I would suggest even those of you who aren't on Flame or just interested in compositing in general to actually check out the first two classes in the preview page. If you remember, you can do that. They're there. I think you might be really interested in taking this course because so many things of what he talked about in the FX Guy TV app and just his philosophy of compositing apply across multiple applications.
Well, I think class 10 is left deliberately blank at this stage for getting that feedback and incorporating it.
Very true.
Okay, so moving on in our alphabetical ordering of the world, our next course is, in fact, VFX producing. Now, you wouldn't think VFX producing would come next in alphabetical order, except for it's with F-Track, which makes it FTK 101. Now, we've never had an F-Track course before, have we?
No, this is our first course in F-Track, and the timing, I guess, probably couldn't have worked out better for us, unbeknownst to us. Well, we had a little bit, but obviously the recent news of Shotgun being acquired by Autodesk is, I think, causing people to look around. I mean, it sounds, from all intents and purposes, if Autodesk follows through, it's like things are going to be okay. They're going to treat Shotgun and the customers well. But frankly, it just does cause people pause to take a moment and look around at the other alternatives. And I think one of the best alternatives out there that's currently available on the market is F-Track. And
yeah, I don't even know that it's a reaction negatively to what's happening with Shotgun. I think generally there's a lot of attention moving into this space, and I think like it's almost like Autodesk buying Shotgun is a validation of just how important the pipeline production management stuff is to actually not going out of business. You know what I mean? Like I do.
And it's hard to, well, I certainly think that news does cause people to look around. I mean, but I'm not sure it's the people who are actually making the decision on what software pipeline to put in a facility. I think a lot of the stuff that you hear on the net and mailing lists and forum posts, where I have seen a lot of people saying, I want to check out F-Track, what is an alternative to Shotgun? I frankly don't think those are the people who are making the decision of whether to necessarily put that in a facility. But I think that, I mean, I don't mean that in negative. It's just natural to actually look at that. So, but I think what's also good about this course is not simply how to use F-Track. We had a really cool Shotgun course a couple terms ago. That course is still available in the vault that actually dealt with how to use Shotgun. But this is kind of looking at it from, okay, here's our task of VFX producing. How does F-Track fit in with that and how do we use it effectively, which I personally like a lot. I think that's going to be a really interesting standpoint of Haz's plans for the term, because he's going to do a lot of stuff. You know, how do you work with Excel and spreadsheets and managing this philosophically? How do you go through producing and managing visual effects workflow? And then you do that by utilizing F-Track. So I think it's kind of an interesting twist to just doing an F-Track course. I think this is going to be really interesting just from a standpoint of learning about VFX producing.
I think I'm not running this by you, but I think there's a perception that if I was DreamWorks, that you know, that makes really good sense to have this big Autodesk-backed Shotgun pipe, because it's, you know, a mega film pipeline mm-hmm. of multiple productions overlapping and stuff. There does seem to be a bit of a perception that if somebody didn't want to go all in hardcore Shotgun, like let's say, because Haz himself has used it on a short film, and that's something that we wouldn't have considered doing a while ago, using, you know, production management tools on just a short film. Do you think that's true?
I think that's very true. I think potentially another aspect that has to do with that is maybe even pricing. It's not incredibly lower per price one, but actually for starting with a small plan, like especially if you're doing a group of, I think they have 3 users, I think, is a little bit cheaper per user per month starting out than it would be if you were utilizing Shotgun. I know that's $30 a month, and it's not a huge difference in price, but I do think that's another aspect. But you're right. I think from talking to people and the research that both Mike and I did in terms of this course, talking to people about what they liked about F-Tractor or who were using it, it seems to have a bit of a sweet spot in the smaller to medium-sized facility, or very, you know, very small, intertwined internet group of people utilizing the software.
Now, I should know this, but I'm blanking. Maybe we could just do a kind of rundown on, like, access to software on that?
On F-Track or just in general?
Yeah. Well,
we'll do it in general. So what's going to happen with F-Track is that we're going to have an extended license of F-Track, a longer demo-free demo period than what you can get if you were just wanted to try it F-Track on your own. Basically, you'll have access to that software through the middle of November. So you'll have free access to the F-Track site through the middle of November. What will happen is you'll just fill out a support request. There's a pull-down menu that you'll be able to say, I want to request a code for F-Track. We'll send a code that will then unlock this membership for you when you sign up on F-Track's site. So basically, fill out a support request with us. We'll give you a code. You visit F-Track, enter the code, and you'll get hooked up with that free membership. We don't have those as of today, Tuesday. We don't have those codes yet, but we expect to have them well before the end of the first week of classes.
Yeah, and in fact, we'll maybe later loop back on some of the other VPN stuff, because there's a particularly, at the end of our run line, there's a particularly big thing that we wanted to get into in that respect. Okay, so we're sort of almost halfway through, and we're into the M's, and that means we're into our motion graphics stuff. Now, Mark Bowie has taught many courses here at FX PhD. Mark has a great kind of typography background, motion graphics background, and Mark is really keen to be back this term directing, or rather doing, as the prof of MOG 214, which is the whole idea of a promo. And Mark's done a lot of work for promos for the BBC. He was heading those up for a fair while here in Australia. And so he's going to be doing some stuff. We're actually going to be doing a shoot with him. We've been working on getting that together at the moment. We're putting up call sheets and stuff. So it's going to work from the basis of, oh, I have to produce something when I don't have much to work with. And if you've ever worked in promos, you know that. But also doing stuff where, you know, you want to put a little shoot together to try and do something more interesting. Because I've got to say, for a lot of channels that are producing material, maybe not the BBC, who's, you know, got terrific first run global brands like Doctor Who, but let's say you're trying to do something that's maybe a repeat, a really good promo can mark the difference between delivering an audience to that and not, you know. And it's more than just cutting up material from the show. It's trying to find a way of, you know, breaking through the clutter and sort of engaging people. So Mark's had a lot of experience at doing that. As I said, I really respect him for his skill in typography and art direction. So it's more than just a sort of a technical course. This mm-hmm. is much more of a kind of a course looking at, you know, the practicality of doing stuff when, you know, you've got someone that has got experience from, I don't know, James Bond films and, and, you know, kind of Fifth Element stuff right through to, as I say, a lot of television work. But it's going to be more, as I say, a creative discussion than it is a complex technical discussion. This is certainly not one of those courses where it's like, this is how you use this particular app from Adobe and these are the buttons you press. And I think as a result, people are going to really respond to it.
Yeah, I think so. And another good aspect of that is a couple different types of work as part of the course this term, which I think is interesting as well, Mike.
Yep.
There are going to be some interesting stuff early in the term, and then the stuff later in the term will focus on kind of a larger project from concept to completion, which I think will be interesting as well. So I think it's kind of got a nice mix of stuff in looking at the type of promos and the type of work that you do as well.
Yeah, and unlike how we're doing with several of the other courses, we're trying to run this one very much to the wire so that you can have very direct input to the process. So we could have shot everything before the term started, but we thought if we didn't do that, you'd have much more access to kind of the process as it's developing. So we've got resources allocated to do this. It's not like a problem, but we just thought that we didn't want to do everything ahead mm-hmm. of time and then have people say, oh, well, it's all been, you know, done. So, yeah, if you're part of that course, Mark would love to get your feedback in the forums, and he's very open to contributions and collaboration. So, I'd really suggest you guys do that.
Take advantage of it.
Yeah, totally.
help guide us, because again, as you can see from much of the stuff that we've talked about at the beginning of this, we really do listen to the feedback from the forums and things like that. So, moving on in the M's, well, you know what? It's interesting. You touched on our first series of courses that we had done, this kind of building a curriculum in digital map painting courses, the first time that we've, not the first, but actually, yeah, it is the first time that we've done something so broad over so many terms dealing with a subject like that. The next course is actually the start, I guess you could say, of taking a look at that another application, and that's Maya, hence the term Maya Foundations Modeling. So we're hoping to do a whole series of courses called Maya Foundations, each dealing with a specific area within Maya. We've had some really great overall Maya courses in the past, and this one's being taught by Matt Leonard, as many of the Maya courses have. A majority, I think, of the Maya courses have been taught by our friend Matt. But this one, of course, deals with modeling, because one of the problems that we faced in talking about the curriculum is it's just, you know, do you just do a bunch of 200 series with a bunch of projects? Do you want to, you know, then ramp up to 300 series? But it seemed like a more sensible approach to actually try and start tackling some of these core skills and score features or core features inside Maya by breaking them down in various parts. And the first one deals with modeling. Obviously, I think a great majority of the classes, I think, Matt's going to be taking a look at NURBS, I think.
Yeah, but he's not only doing that because the NURBS are great, right?
Yeah.
But a big favorite of mine. Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, I've been, as you know, like, following the subdivision services, Pixar's Open Subdiv stuff, since they first launched it.
Yeah.
And so I was really glad that he's incorporating the Subdiv stuff. You know, like, there's going to be a bunch of different stuff because it's fundamentally looking at building blocks at a modeling level. But it's just, you know, for me, certainly, in just efficiency and in ways of being able to control your pipeline, you know, some of the things like the stuff from Pixar are of enormous interest. And, you know, are dealt with well in some packages, not so much in others. But, you know, Maya has been given quite a lot of new sort of injection of, I don't know, what you'd call it, really, enthusiasm, mm-hmm. It seems like, in the last couple of years. So clearly it's a cornerstone of most pipelines. It's used around the world. But we wanted to just really get in there and sort of tackle things, as you say, in a very kind of consistent and sensible way. The other thing about Matt, I just want to flag for those of you, you know, you mentioned he's done a lot of Maya stuff, but he's also a very experienced Nuke guy. So this is really important because there's no doubt in the world that you're going to be doing a lot of work in Maya that will be feeding into a Nuke pipeline. So having a good understanding of how things will be picked up later, be it modeling, obviously it's very much more relevant in rendering, but yeah, it's just good to have a professor that has a very strong comp, you know, deep comp, understands all the sort of the niceties and complexities of things you might want to set up early so that you can take advantage of them later.
Very true, very true. So we're really excited to kind of start with this new curriculum reboot with Matt. And again, I think it's going to be a great course to start out with.
And that whole Nuke thing segues into the fact that obviously we've been a huge Nuke you know, supporter from day one. But I remember the day that I sat with the Foundry guys as they were saying, hey, what do you think if we were to buy Nuke from D2? In a hotel room, and I remember staring out the window thinking that is just an astonishingly good idea. and as such, we've got a lot of Nuke courses that are available in the vault. We've got Nuke courses that are obviously available here in the new section. And of the standard courses, we have, what, two new and four, I think, total that are in the standard courses. And I can't off the top of my head think how many there are in the vault.
But
it's got to be like five... seven, okay, more than that.
There's
nine,
a lot.
10. Yeah, it's about, so we've got a range of Nuke stuff. So John, do you want to tell us about what these two new Nuke courses are and why we've included them in the run sheet?
Yes, that took me a while to get right in the O Week video saying new Nuke courses. Yeah, the first one is being taught by Victor Perez. Very happy to have Victor back, because I think from very early in the term of our April term, which is our Victor's first term teaching FX PhD. We got a lot of great feedback from him, as well as just watching the courses, classes ourselves, seeing the kind of preparation and detail that he brings into teaching. So when I basically said, hey, look, we'd love to have you back. I don't know if you can teach something for us next term. And he's like, yeah, let's figure something out. So a passion of Victor's, and I think it's always great if you can get someone to teach something that they're passionate about. I think that's a no-brainer. A passion for him is dealing with Python and Nuke, as well as building gizmos. In fact, a lot of the stuff he's done, I think, actually it's here in the description, he's voted number 2 most valuable Nukepedia contributor in 2012, and of course has certified training from our site.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. I thought you'd pause, but yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Nuke certified trainer and just he's very well known for his courses with us because he's really popular.
Yeah, he is. And so I'm really happy to have him teaching this course. I think one of the great things, in fact, we were at the Flame User Group meeting. One of the comments from the audience or questions for Philippe at the end was, hey, when are we going to get something like where we can build our own custom nodes and expose sliders? And I was like Gizmos. if let's not beat around the bush, when is Flame going to have Gizmo? But it really actually does make a significant significant impact on your production to be able to build these effective custom tools or multiple tools that you can build to apply a specific technique. I remember actually we did something on Alice with Kerry Villegas, yep. Yeah, and he actually showed some cool scaling tools that they use as part of that production. So you can see from all types of production that people are building really clever gizmos to actually expose only a few things that an artist needs to know to get the job done. And so he's going to cover that as from the ground up, basically taking a look at Python from the ground up and then building into creating and customizing new GUI through various tools as well as building tools or gizmos. I like the yeah. I love gizmology too as a term. Sorry.
Okay, and then that course is deemed a 200 level course. So while it's Python coding, don't be put off if you're not a Python person, because it's not a 300 level course that's going to leave you for dust. So it's like a 200 level thing. I know that there is a little bit of resistance from some artists over this kind of stuff, but I don't think that's something one can really hold particularly dearly if you want to keep your career moving forward, which is after all what PhD is all about.
I think approachable, now, just to interject, approachable is a good word for this. Yeah. Approachable to the artist.
Yeah. Now, we do have 300 level courses because we are the place that, likes to try and get the hardcore stuff. We don't really like the cooking class, 2-minute tips and tricks stuff that just, is all show and no substance. And to do that, you have to get into some really hardcore stuff. Plus, I figure we figure that you guys really want 300 level courses. There's a lot of demand for them, and so we're always really proud of having 300 level new courses. So this is our Nuke 309, John?
Yeah, which makes it our ninth advanced new course, I believe.
And by a particularly skilled Emmy and VES award-winning supervisor and prof.
Yeah, this is another course we've been working on for a while. I guess to actually talk a little bit, sometimes we kind of divulge some stuff about how things work behind the scenes at FXPHD. We were originally actually planning to have this course as part of our April term. I went down to Mexico City to do a shoot. We got everything together. But one thing we wanted to avoid is having a busy prof who couldn't get the classes done. And Aran Dunner, who's teaching this course, actually got really busy in early April, was going to be really busy. His show got extended, and so we decided to postpone this course another term. So just kind of a bit of insight into the inner workings of FXPhD. Sometimes that happens. We have to delay things, but we're really happy to have him back or doing this course this term. He's taught courses for us in the past, and this one is focusing on new compositing as well as digital environments. One of the scenes he's doing is actually really, frankly, an incredibly challenging balcony shot. It was a really difficult shot to track. We actually intentionally did that as part of the production to have something really hard to work with. It was hard to track. Lots of work with it, from replacing the floor of the balcony to adding a handrail over it, basically replacing all the stuff behind the woman on the balcony. Because we actually filmed the shot at the director's apartment, which is actually located on the ground floor. And the idea being that this the woman, our heroine in the short film is actually in a penthouse apartment high up overlooking Mexico City where all the people vanished. So just right there, we've got really a lot of challenging stuff to talk with, from green screen, not really covering the camera tracking. Hopefully we'll be doing that in a future course. Leak.
Might be another course that was moved back one term. Yes,
yes, exactly.
But it's going to have other stuff, like there's, well, not the stuff on this balcony shot, right? It's not just the green screen, because there's a speed tree being used.
Yeah, well, that is part of that shot, so, or part
of... Yeah, that's what I'm saying,
yeah. Yeah, so it's actually covering a lot of stuff. It's not, you know, frankly, it's, you know, the shot is something that could be actually two terms worth of stuff, but Iran wants to do is focus on some key aspects of that comp and what needs to be done. For that comp and sharing techniques that actually he's learned on the job, brainstorming stuff that he thinks that would be really useful, skills in artists would be really useful when he was looking to hire someone or add someone to the team actually at Brainstorm. So,
yeah, because he works at Brainstorm. He's actually worked at ILM in Singapore. He worked on, got a ton of stuff there from Star Trek and Iron Man and Terminator and Indiana Jones. But, more recently, he's worked on Wolf of Wall Street, but the stuff that we covered in FX Guide, I think, was his stuff, the VES stuff for Boardwalk Empire, and it might have been, I think, yeah, The Men Who Built America, I'm sure we covered that with him as well. So, yeah, really, really good guy, and this is a 300-level course, so, you know, you need someone with heavy-duty, you know, IMDb kind of credits to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and one thing I want to add that we didn't mention this, but I was just speaking with Eduardo today, as part of this course, as we've done in the past, those members who are taking this course, we do have other scenes as part of the short film that Eduardo has done that we're willing to share. If people are interested for building shots for their reel, getting some feedback from both Iran as well as Eduardo, I think it would be really interesting learning standpoint to actually, you know, work on a shot, get feedback to the director, go back to the drawing board. Because one thing that if you're building something just for your reel, you can really get somewhat myopic in just doing something your way and the way you want to do things. And the reality is in production, in the real world, is you're going to get feedback from someone. And you're going to have to do stuff that maybe you didn't think of, maybe you don't want to do. But I think that's part of the learning process at FX PhD as well, isn't it? Giving you that kind of opportunity to get feedback from a director, make revisions, send it back, get more revisions, things like that, and actually end up with a shot for your reel that is actually not part of the standard course that we're doing as well. So a bit more unique in the material that you'd get, but of course it does take some time input on your end if you want to volunteer to do that, but it's just another aspect of the course and the curriculum at FX PhD this term.
Yeah. Now, in contrast to that kind of 300-level course, we also have an Introduction to Photogrammetry 100-level course. And Trevor Coates is teaching this. And I want to discuss this from a couple of different aspects. Firstly, I think that, you know, reconstruction techniques are increasingly being used. Obviously, sometimes people are doing LiDAR scans. But what's kind of interesting to me is, and I get asked this all the time, is people say, well, you know, I want to get in, I want to break in, I want to, you know, what's a good path? And I've given lots of advice over the years, and I stick to a lot of it, which is, you know, like photo stuff in Roto, for example, and paint, you know, which may not seem very glamorous, but can be some spectacularly complicated work. In fact, we're going to be discussing some of that coming up. I know a PhD member who now works at a major facility spent 3 months on a single shot just doing paint and Roto cleanup. And it's just in stereo, some of the most impressive work I've ever seen. And there's just no doubt that this is the best possible kind of way to move on up into doing major, major senior feature film work. And he is going to do exactly that. So we'll be talking about that over in FX Guide in a coming story when that film is released. But one of the other ones that came to my attention, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, John, is every once in a while there's something that comes along that people want to use, but it doesn't fall under a traditional thing. Like paint and Roto is like a very well understood area. And if you can become a bit of an expert in that thing, now, I would say one of those things a few years ago would have been stereo. At the outset of stereo, if you could have been somebody that really had sort of self-taught a bunch of stuff on that, you'd have found it easier to get into some places. And there are some other occasions like this where you'll get something that comes along and somebody goes, oh, that's really handy if you know that. It may not be your total job, but it might be the thing that makes you stand out from the crowd. And I think using a bunch of tools that have come out in recent years, many of them very inexpensive, such as PhotoScan, is exactly that. So if you are somebody that doesn't have, you know, the feeling like you've got the ability to just walk in the door with a killer reel that has all the blockbuster tentpole pictures on it, and you want to have something that you can build up some skills in that will then feed in other work, but maybe make you stand out from the crowd. Photogrammetry is exactly something like that. It's not that it's necessarily, as I say, there are people that are obviously doing it, but I wouldn't necessarily advocate that this is going to be your full-time career. It's more likely that this will then feed into work you're doing in matte painting or compositing or 3D or whatever else it is, but it could really make you stand out from the crowd. So this is definitely a 100 level course with that in mind, that the people that we're aiming this at would be people that were thinking, I want to learn how to do this. Yes, on a major feature film, they're going to walk in with tons of LiDAR and do it all properly, but hey, I can do this for maybe previs. I could do this for, as I say, matte painting, or even just being able to do a commercial where they've not got the budget to pull in a LiDAR team. So it's good, I think, in balance of those 300 courses to have some of these 100-level courses for those of you that may be a little earlier in your career.
Don't you think an interesting aspect of that is also the approachability of the technology in doing this yourself?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
You know, you have a good camera.
We're using a drone that we shot down on by the water. And in this drone footage, we had a digital SLR. I remember putting our 5D on it, and it wasn't working very well. And I'm thinking, I'm so going to hate the phone call to John when I say we lost the 5D into... You know, it's like, so if we're not really comfortable with this going over the water, guys, maybe we should do this shot from the land. But it'd always been spec'd out to be from the air. But of course, a set of stills coming from a drone circling around a flagpole at the end of like a on the water. It's just something that you can't photograph. I mean, I guess you get it from a boat, but you wouldn't be able to get very high on it. But yeah, with the inexpensive nature of drones and stuff these days and how many people have them, this is like a really good use of that. So maybe you could have your own drone. Maybe you could team up with somebody else and use it to do reconstruction work and stuff for areas like this where it's just really not easy to do. That's not the only shot we're doing. There's a bunch of shots in this course that Trevor's doing. I think it's going to be a really interesting kind of generalist thing. And that's Trevor's background, certainly. He is not... he's currently like a freelancer working in Sydney, mainly on things like TVC. But this is the sort of thing you might use in a non-broadcast sense. I could imagine somebody using this for a promo or something else. So, yeah. But the latter part of it will be, picking up various different things and doing them from... I should also make one other point, sorry, I was spacing on this. One of the problems with this course, though, and we got to be really careful about this, is that you may end up with taking a huge number of pictures when doing a course like this because there will be some occasions when you'd be better off doing your own photography and then using the techniques from the course. Obviously, we'll provide some data from the course, but like a drone taking shots from the air could generate a huge amount of material to download. So we'll be balancing out the downloads with stuff that you can shoot yourself.
Good point. Very good point.
The background of any of these courses, I think, is sometimes as interesting as the courses themselves and when you're trying to work out where to do them and where they're coming from. So obviously that's what we try and do in the course. DOD. Oh God, I did it again. We used to call this the DOD, and I always fall into the habit of calling it that again, but I shouldn't say that. This week in FX PhD, we try and give you that background information, which is one of the reasons why we have this sort of conversational discussion of each of the courses. The per class information is, of course, available online, and you can go through that and see what's in each of the classes. So, John, do you want to give us the background on our Premiere Pro course?
2 years in the making. Really happy to have Premiere Pro and basically Scott Simmons teaching a new course for us this term. I really do believe I started talking to Scott a couple years ago about teaching a course, and the fact is he's just an incredibly busy guy. He's in very high demand, working on jobs from his home base in Tennessee. But what's great about Scott is, and you may know this, and Mike, you know this, I'm sure, but those of you listening may recognize that name because he used to have a site called The Edit Blog. Started it in 2005, back when the internets were still new. Well, okay, They weren't new then. But basically started on his own, covering the world of editing and sharing tips and tricks and tutorials with audience members around the world, readers all around the world. His site has grown up. It's now part of Pro Video Coalition, which has a bunch of different people working on it. But again, he kind of, I think, was actually one of the earlier people, frankly, doing that from an editing standpoint, or at least I should say one of the top people doing that from an editing standpoint. And his background in editing involves lots of different applications. He's used Final Cut Pro, the new Final Cut Pro, Adobe Premiere Pro, Avid, a lot of various applications. This certainly knows in detail what their strengths and weaknesses are in getting the job done. And of course, for this one, he's going to be covering Premiere Pro, really effectively working on best practices for using the application from start to finish. Starting out as to why you might want to use it, but then just working through process and the hurdles in working with all software has hurdles that you have to jump over to get the job done. But from ingest, editing, audio, finishing, as well as highlighting many of the new features, and frankly, I would say cool new features that were just released in the Creative Cloud 2014 edition. We've had a lot of great Premiere Pro courses in the past, but this is one I'm personally looking forward to because I have definitely fully moved over, as you have, Mike, as well, over to Premiere Pro. So any knowledge I can get from someone like Scott, I'm going to take advantage of it. I think, Mike, this kind of fits in with one of those, what can we learn about and what would be good for us to learn about? And that sounds like a great course.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. His edit blog was actually named one of the like 10 or 50 best blogs in movie making by Movie Making Magazine. Like he is very well known around the net, and so you're absolutely right. It's great to have him doing stuff. And again, Premiere, I mean, I love it. I can't imagine using Final Cut anymore. It's nerve-wracking to me when I see what happened to that sort of photo app before I moved over to Lightroom.
Right. Well, I would say it's nerve-breaking to see what happened to that editing app, Final Cut, before you moved over to Premiere Pro. Yes, we've talked about this in the past. It's like apparently the new Final Cut's getting better, but I'm not willing to jump to that ship.
I think that boat sailed, but anyway. Exactly. Hey, okay, so I want to talk about, the final new course on offer, though we do have...
Just very cool.
We have Background Fundamentals, which is the free course you'll get throughout the term. We have all the VPN stuff, which I'm going to dovetail into this discussion, and a bunch of other stuff that is all available at fxphd.com. But this RenderMan course, okay, so we've had RenderMan courses in the past. What makes this exceptionally interesting to me is that we've been working very closely with Pixar. RenderMan came out with a new version. Now, it's a radically different version of RenderMan in two real kind of concrete ways as far as it would impact you guys. Firstly, it is actually RenderMan 19, though they've changed the structure of the product dramatically in terms of how they're marketing it and distributing it, which means that RenderMan is free to people who want to get a hold of it and that aren't using it like commercially moving forward. And this is a big difference because up until now, it's been... I mean, when I was growing up, it was like you wanted to use RenderMan, but no one could even afford the $4,000 or $10,000 to even get a single license to be able to learn the darn sucker. The thing about Pixar's approach is that they want to have people out there in the community developing stuff. They want to have people knowing how to use it. So they're really actively pushing this idea of building up the base of users. Now, they're not going to give it away free to, major customers. And certainly a lot of the major houses, as we all know, use RenderMan. It's has been for years one of the most dominant renderers in the market. But this idea of having more access and more freely available stuff on 19 is just hugely popular. It's caused enormous amounts of interest. Their site was just inundated with requests for when this becomes available, send me an email. Well, at FXPHD, we can get you access to that new version of 19 before it's released. So if you join up for the course and you are part of this RenderMan, which is RND102, this course, and you say a Maya user, you'll be able to get access to the beta, of RenderMan 19 before it's available to the general public. Now, we don't know when it's going to be available to the general public. I'm guessing sometime maybe after SIGGRAPH. I don't know. I really honestly don't. But the point is that Pixar is very keen. They know us very well. They know Christoph, who's teaching it very well. And so they're keen to have PhD members as part of the beta pool. So Christoph, we made this a 100-level course because my theory was that, or I think you actually said it, John, is that if it's now available free, a lot of people are going to want to get into it that are, you know, used to using, I don't know, whatever, with, say, Maya or Max, and now they can move over to using RenderMan. So rather than making this an advanced-level course, we assume the advanced-level users were already in facilities that had access to RenderMan licenses. So what we're making this as a course for is not someone that's new to 3D, per se, but new to RenderMan. So it's going to give you an introduction to the path tracing and all the new stuff that's inside RenderMan. Because the second thing that they've done inside the RenderMan is now provided a whole new mechanism in addition to the Rees renderer. So you've got the Rees renderer, that's the kind of classic rendering mode, and then you've got the new ways of working, which is the bidirectional, which is both uni and bidirectional path tracing inside RenderMan. Now, if you're not up with path tracing and some of the stuff that's going on there, this is going to be a really great opportunity to understand that. It is absolutely incredible, the sort of quality and the work that you can get out of this, the new renderer. I've been writing about this over at FX Guide. John, you and I both have been very up on the work that has been coming out of Pixar these last couple of years. The subsurface scattering, the stuff to do with caustics in particular, really complicated stuff that is going to be all covered in this course. It's not, as I say, like it's a 100-level course so that if you're new to RenderMan, but it's not assumed that you are, you know, new to 3D. So it's going to be discussing stuff as if you totally understand a 3D pipeline, but you just want to understand how to get hold of RenderMan. But oh my God, if you're in a facility and you want to like get up to speed on this before anybody else in your company, how cool would that be? So yeah, we're really, really proud of this one.
Yeah, and you know, it's this is one of those things also, I think, when the simplicity of just doing a numbering system and title is a bit misleading, because, I mean, you just mentioned so much that was new as part of this in the new RenderMan 19 that, you know, even if you've taken the RenderMan courses with us in the past, I mean, sure, there's going to be overlap. Sure, there's going to be stuff maybe that you know that he's going to cover, but there's going to be a lot of new stuff in this as well, right? This is not just simply for someone, only for someone totally new to RenderMan. If you want to get up to speed on 19, this is actually a great opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard picking what the number is. I guess I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, Christos and I went back and forth about this thought, but I thought if it wasn't a 100 level, you'd assume that, you know, you needed to understand RenderMan. And there is some history of people being kind of put off by RenderMan because of the shaders and stuff. But a lot of the shader writing complexity comes from an era before physically based shading and lighting. And a lot of the stuff that comes with the physically based shading and lighting makes it sort of simpler. In a sense, you're taking away time from the artist by adding complexity into the software, but the complexity of the software means it's simpler to the user. And so with the new structure of RenderMan, in fact, you can go incredibly far down the path. And one of the things that we'll touch on later in the course, just briefly, is the idea that you can, in fact, write your own kind of plug-in versions of the renderer. So if you wanted to see a render, you could sort of swap out the core of what is actually doing the rendering with something that's different, that may be showing in a different way. And those are the sort of things that TDs are going to go crazy about. And there is source code being offered for parts of RenderMan free to do all that. But instead of going down that path of like, hey, let's write your own code and modify and hack the stuff that they've given, what we're going to try and do is say, okay, this is somebody in Christos, if you've done his courses before, you know he really understands shading and lighting. He's written stuff for films like, Superman Returns, Spider-Man 3, a lot of the Beowulf kind of Christmas Carol stuff that was done. So he really understands this well. He's totally able to write that kind of stuff, but I'm pushing very heavily that I think this would be a perfect course, as you say, for somebody that says, I'm going to get up to speed with 19. So, it's 100 and a half.
Right. I know. It's just, I just wanted to point out that don't be, you know, if you've taken some RenderMan courses from us in the past, this is, there's still going to be useful stuff in this. You know, I'm not trying to just, I'm not just trying to sell a course. I'm not just trying to cha-ching. I'm really not. I'm being honest here in that. Mike spoke a lot to Christos a couple weeks ago about that. We had a really great conversation. There's going to be a lot of great stuff. And what you say, Mike, it leaves a lot of opening in the future for really cool stuff to follow up with this course. If this course is popular and you guys think it's interesting, believe me, we've, you know, Christos and Mike and myself have a lot of great ideas on how to build more of these in the future. So we start with 100, lots of ways that we can build up with new, really cool and more hardcore stuff moving forward. But a lot of accounts on seeing how many people sign up for this and seeing what kind of interest there is, which I frankly think is going to be a lot. I mean, you know, I wrote RenderMan shaders, right? I mean, I was actually looking at some of my archives from an old hard drive, and I noticed a couple of .rib files that I wrote like well over 10 years ago. Like, I think on my 2S, Mac 2SI. I mean, how long? That was a while ago. Anyway, looking forward to that. But anyway.
It's great. I mean, like, you know, I can't begin to say how much we appreciate Pixar and Disney's support in doing this, because this isn't open to, you know, this is because of years of us doing training here at FX PhD. We built up these relationships to allow us to offer this to you. Please take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And one other thing I really want to say on this is that it is, it's a bit like I was talking about with the photogrammetry earlier. It is really great if you can get on the ground floor with something, because, you know, somebody gets a project up and running and they need someone that has some idea of what's going on, and the software's only just been released. And if you've been on it for a few months, well, then you've just got this great advantage and you're a head start. So we're very proud to be able to offer this, and we really appreciate the support from the Disney Pixar guys.
Yeah, and what we're going to do is actually, in order to get the software, we'll need you to fill out a support request, because it is going to be limited to only people taking the course. Because obviously, if we're going to invest that kind of time, we want to make sure that they're actually learning how to use it. We'll have a special forum section, a beta forum section on FX PhD that Christos will be around. Ryan's actually going to be around, and presumably, and we'll have people from Pixar as well monitoring it at the very least. They'll be checking in and reading what you guys are writing, and we'll also be forwarding the feedback from our forums into their beta program. So you'll be able to actually hopefully get feedback to Pixar for things that aren't working or things that need to be improved as well. So it should be a cool opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of that, the other VPN software that we have, if you want to check it out, it's under the Resources tab, Knowledge Base. There's lots under the VPN section. You can see all the software that we have available on the VPN, from Lightbrush to Hero to Katana. Moto 801 is actually new this term for us. The updated version, Cinema 4D, the old versions, or current shipping versions of RenderMan, as well as a whole lot of other software available for you. And that's one of the great things about FX PhD, is having access to these full working versions of software that you can use to build your reel, to learn. You're not allowed to use it for commercial purposes. In other words, if you're making money with a project that you're rendering or using that software for, that's not allowed. But otherwise, to learn it and get up to speed, it's a fantastic opportunity, because you don't get those, you know, silty watermarks. You don't get the strange inability to save a file. I mean, that's ridiculous on trial software, where they don't actually let you save a file and reopen to work on it later. It's like they obviously have never worked before in their software. But anyway, it really is a great opportunity to have that available on the VPN as part of the membership. Mike, I think you totaled it up, and how much was it? I mean, this was like several terms ago, but it's a lot.
$34,000, I think.
Yeah, some crazy. So take advantage of that, as well as take advantage of the forums, because, again, with the standard courses, you have the profs available there. You actually have other members to get feedback. And I think if you watch the O Week video this term, you hear from some long-term members how valuable the forums are for them. Mike and I talk about it every friggin' week, but I think it was really great in the O Week video to actually hear from other members how fantastic the forums were and what kind of value add that was for the FX PhD membership.
So that's it for this this week in FX PhD. Obviously, we want to encourage you guys to ask us questions and stuff. I particularly want any input you have into this term's background courses, but it's all in the forums. Just check it all out. And if you have any things, as John said, we really recommend that you use the terrific support tool that gets logged properly and then ticked off. So if you have something that comes up, emailing us is possible, but it's just more effective to email support through the website. And as John said, also, if you want to keep a tab on us on Twitter, if anything happens with the site, like there's some kind of problem or something, John will normally quickly post something on Twitter just as an alternate way of making sure we get the message out there. Actually, you can also follow us individually if you want. I'm Mike Seymour on Twitter, and John, you are?
John Mont FX, JohnMontFX. I also have a John Mont slurry, which is totally not related, but my personal
account. I don't think even I follow that. but that's because some bastard John Montgomery at Microsoft always mixed the straight John Montgomery. So there's no, apparently there are no Mike Seymours out there of any interest. So there you go. Like we always do like hearing from you, and we do, really try and take those things into consideration. And as I say, our thoughts are with and our prayers are with to all the Brazilians out there in their semi-final humiliation against Germany. We feel for you guys. Okay. Thanks so much, guys, for being with us. We hope to see you in FXPhD. And we really appreciate you being with us here on the podcast.
We'll talk to you next week. See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FXPhD.